Good day, and welcome to the Executive Order Call. Currently, all phone lines are in a listen-only mode. Later, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions during a question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Please be advised today's program may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Gabriella Schneider. You may begin.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I'm so pleased that we are able to listen to experts from both sides of the aisle about the need for more transparency of money in politics. I'm Gabriella Schneider. I'm Senior Director of Communications and Strategy at Issue One. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the influence of money in politics and putting Americans of all stripes back in control of our democracy. We're elevating money in politics as the core civic issue of our time. I wanted to just do a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the call. As you heard, that this call is moderated by an operator, so you will be able to ask your questions. Just remember, when it's time for Q&A, you will hit star one. We will have not a transcript, but an MP3 audio recording of the call available on Issue One's blog afterwards. So go to issueone.org. You should see it if you scroll down or go click on news you need, and that's how you get to our blog. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Issue One Reform. And if you'd like to get in touch with me to set up any interviews or have other questions answered, please email me at gab@issueone.org. Now, with that set aside, I'd love to get started. More than any other recent time in history, money in politics is dominating the presidential election landscape. In 12 years, presidential election spending has doubled from about $3.1 billion in 2000 to $6.3 billion in 2012, and experts predict we might even reach $10 billion this election year. The Center for Responsive Politics, known for their Open Secrets website, recently found that so-called dark money groups that do not disclose their donors, their spending rose from $6 million in 2004 to $308 million in the last presidential election. And that's just what we can efficiently track with the current rules. But we're here to talk about updating those rules. Poll after poll shows that American people are frustrated with the current system. They want solutions like transparency that will empower everyday people in their democracy. And all of the front-runner presidential candidates, including Donald Trump and Senator Ted Cruz on the Republican side, have talked about the need for transparency. Today, our panelists will use their personal experiences at the highest levels of government to explain why President Obama's recent call for, quote-unquote, better politics must include greater transparency in politics, and that includes by taking action on a long, languishing executive order that would increase transparency in the federal contracting process. We're joined today by several members of Issue One's Reformers Caucus. This is the largest bipartisan group of elected officials speaking out for comprehensive campaign finance reform ever assembled. And today on the call, we are joined by Governor John Huntsman from Utah, Secretary of Agriculture Dan Glickman, Ambassador Tim Romer, who is also Senior Strategic Advisor to Issue One and represented the good folks in Indiana. We also are joined by Richard Painter, who served as ethics lawyer in the George W. Bush White House, is a board member of the conservative campaign finance reform organization, Take Back Our Republic, and Professor Painter also just recently joined Issue One's advisory board. With that, I'd like to turn things over to Ambassador Tim Romer.
Thank you, Gabriella, and I want to start by thanking Governor Huntsman and Secretary Glickman and Richard Painter for joining today on this call. I know they're very busy people, and they devote their time to causes they really care about, and we're honored to have them on the call today. First of all, let me just start by stating that we are in a crisis for our American democracy. There's a breakdown in our ability to govern and fix problems. Outside of D.C., there is no disagreement that we need to fix this problem. Democrats, Republicans, independents, Sanders supporters, Trump supporters all agree that there's too much money in our politics. Let me give you an example of this. Public opinion is so strongly in favor of more disclosure in our politics. 78% of Democrats, 2/3 of Republicans support this effort, including approximately 77% of Donald Trump supporters. The president, we hope, will sign an executive order to give everyday Americans the right to know how much federal contractors are spending in our elections across the board. Last week, I think many of us read or saw the president in Springfield, Illinois, talk about cleaning up our democracy and talking about restoring civility into the process. The very first issue he mentioned to clean up our politics is to address the dominance of big money in our political system. We hope that today or soon the president will match these eloquent words with the stroke of a pen and sign this executive order to require federal contractors to disclose their giving in our federal elections. We need to shine a bright light on the dark money in our federal contracting system. The winners in this system should be based simply on merit and competition and not what on a company can dole out as campaign contributions. Despite saying in the State of the Union, the president said, and I quote, we have to reduce the influence of money in our politics so that a handful of families and hidden interests can't bankroll our elections. Now the president has the opportunity to address this problem across our politics. This executive order would include about 70% of the Fortune 100 companies in the United States. It will help reduce wasteful spending and reduce the influence of special interests in American politics. And as I said before, almost a million people, American citizens, have signed a petition in favor of this executive order. We have states such as New Jersey, Utah, and Minnesota that already have these kinds of rules on the books for governors that are engaging with businesses. State governments have this requirement that contractors must disclose their giving practices. And just about a month ago, we had a number of our Reformers Caucus from Issue 1, this bipartisan group of members, sign a letter to the president encouraging him in the strongest way to tackle this subject and sign the executive order. And we had people such as Senator Carl Levin, former Secretary Norm Mineta, former Senator Alan Simpson, Governor Huntsman, Dan Glickman, and many, many others in a bipartisan way show their support for this executive order. So I'm very, very encouraged by the strong bipartisanship when we've had some opposition to executive orders in the past that this can be done. And I would just conclude by saying that there is a great deal of attention now to the Supreme Court vacancy and a battle now on what Congress should be doing or what the president should be doing and the Senate should do to immediately confirm someone or not to do that and wait for the next president. In the meantime, there are many things that Congress and the president can do to clean up our politics and shine light on this dark money, including an executive order. But there are many other things in transparency, disclosure, FEC reform, IRS reform, states taking on this responsibility. That can be done while we watch what the Senate does with this vacancy. So much can be done to fix our broken system. And with that, let me turn this over to my friend, Governor John Huntsman from the state of Utah to discuss his support for the president signing his executive order. John?
Thanks, Tim. I'm honored to join you and Dan and Richard and so many others who are part of the Reformers Caucus. I'm here as a reform-minded Republican. I'm here because this is executive order is ready to move forward. It's not talk. It's not theory. It's actually something that can be acted on. But I'm also here because we actually did it in our state, and for two reasons that were important to me at the time. One is this executive order is about fairness for taxpayers. When businesses compete for our tax dollars, Americans have the right to know if they've spent money influencing our elections. It's always good to shine a big light on dark money in our federal contracting system. Winners, as Tim mentioned, should always be based on merit and competition and not on which company can dole out the most in the way of campaign contributions. But number two, I believe just as strongly that it's about enhancing believability and trust in our institutions of public governance. We have low voter turnout in this country, and it's long-term corrosive to a healthy democracy. I think when you look back to the last election cycle, 2014, you have to go back 70 years before that, all the way to World War II, to find a lower voter turnout year. But it's also created what I would call a trust deficit, where people have less and less belief in their institutions of democracy, politics, and governance, and something has to be done about that to enhance the believability and the trust in our institutions of public governance. I felt so strongly about this as governor of the great state of Utah that we created what I called the Governor's Commission on Strengthening Utah's Democracy. How do we get more people turning out, participating, and voting? And through it all, which was months in the works, we found, maybe not surprising to many on this call, that issues like the one we're here talking about, money in politics, disclosure, transparency, really were at the heart of a lot of the despair that many feel about the state of our democracy. So we made a push in our state. We identified specifically some steps that we could take in order to strengthen people's trust and their believability in institutions of public governance. And it just so happens that this issue, discouraging pay-to-play politics, was one such outcome. And I believe that New Jersey and Minnesota are the other two states that have done something similar. So we urge President Obama to renew his commitment to support transparency for taxpayers. This executive order may not prevent the bad apples from purposely breaking the law, but it will certainly give confidence to the American people that these kinds of scandals are the exception, not the rule. So it's now my great honor to turn the conversation over to my fellow Reformers Caucus member, former Secretary of Agriculture, Dan Glickman from Kansas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Tim. And, you know, it was the criminal bank robber Willie Sutton who was once asked, why did he rob banks? And his simple answer was, because that's where the money is. And I suppose it's unrealistic and unwise to think that we will ever get rid of campaign contributions, but why do people give money to candidates and to organizations that are supporting political parties and independent groups and everybody else? Because that's where the action is. That's where the policies are made. And so given that, I think that what we are trying to do is to ensure that everybody knows who is giving money to influence elections, and not just, of course, candidates, but to those contributions that are made to outside and independent groups. I am co-chair of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Democracy Project, and one of our most important recommendations to fix our governing crisis was about this kind of disclosure. Disclose all political contributions, including those made to outside and independent groups. And the executive order accomplishes what Congress is not doing right now. It gives the Americans the sunshine they need to understand where the money is going into politics, so that the dark money becomes light money again. It doesn't necessarily stop it. We're not trying to do that. We're just trying to make sure that it's fully and totally disclosed. And as Governor Huntsman said, that will help improve transparency in government and help restore trust that our government is on the level and it's not always pay to play. So given that, I want to return back to Ambassador Romer at this time.
Thank you, Dan, and thanks, John, for your very eloquent words and spot-on description of what this executive order would accomplish. I'd like to introduce Professor Richard Painter, who just joined us. He was the ethics lawyer in President George W. Bush's administration. He's on Issue One's advisory board, and he wrote a very compelling op-ed in the New York Times just recently about why conservative Republicans should be in favor of reforming the big money in our politics and be for things like this executive order. Richard, thank you for joining us, and the floor is all yours.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Romer and Governor Huntsman and Secretary Glickman. I'm pleased to discuss this with you today. I've talked about the why conservatives need to support campaign finance reform, not only in the New York Times op-ed, but my new book, Taxation Only with Representation, The Conservative Conscience and Campaign Finance Reform. And one of the things I point out is that in the book I go into some detail on this, government spending has grown enormously over the past several decades, and quite a lot of that is driven by both lobbying and our campaign finance system. And voters, taxpayers, have the right to know that their money is being spent wisely and that it's not going to bridges to nowhere and solar energy companies that make more hot air than they do anything else and various other wasteful expenditures that have occurred under both Republican and Democratic administrations. Voters across the board, liberal, moderate, conservative, are really fed up with our system of campaign finance. And there's also the concern of foreign companies and foreign lobbyists getting access to American politicians. And I know they say that's illegal, but there are dozens of ways to get around the law on foreign contributions. Putting all this together, it's imperative that the public know how much money has been contributed to political campaigns and other political electioneering communications by government contractors. And the president needs to sign an executive order on this right away. And one other thing I want to point out, there's been a lot of politicization of the Supreme Court in the past few days. I think that there's a lot that both Congress and the president can do that is clearly within the confines of the Citizens United case, whether or not we agree with that decision. There's a lot that both the Congress and the president can do right now to fix the campaign finance system, and there's only so much that politicians ought to get away with simply blaming this on the Supreme Court and telling the voters that their only option is to elect them president so they can replace the Supreme Court justice with a Senate majority, and that is the only way to fix the system. It's not. There are plenty of things we can do, and this executive order is one of them, and I would hope to see the president sign it right away.
Well, thank you so much. We're now going to go into the Q&A session for this call, but before we do that, I did want to highlight that, as we mentioned, Richard Painter is on the board of Take Back Our Republic, and I wanted to highlight an event tomorrow that Take Back Our Republic, our friends over there, are hosting, and that is a rally at the White House to push President Obama on this executive order. That takes place tomorrow, Wednesday, February 17th at 11:30 a.m., and you can find out more details, including the location for the pre-rally meeting, at takeback.org. And with that, I'd like to make sure that we have some questions now, ample time, and it seems like we do. We're actually ahead of schedule. So if you do have questions, remember it's star and then one, and the operator will help us go through those in a timely fashion. Thank you.
Certainly. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's star then one to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And we will take our first question from Juliet Ilperin with The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi there. I know you all have talked about the potential executive order that the president might issue, but when you talk to most people about what are some of the things that could be done right now through executive action to address campaign finance, most point to the FEC and the fact about how little they do to enforce the existing laws. I was wondering if you could talk a little about how you see that as playing a role in addressing the problems, why you think President Obama hasn't done more to strengthen that commission, given that everyone's serving expired terms, and if there's anything else you would identify that the president himself could do to strengthen the system. Thanks.
Let me try first, Juliet. Thank you for joining us, and good to talk to you again. First of all, I would say that the president signing this executive order is a modest first step toward reform. And with so little being accomplished these days on this front, this step would be a huge shot across the bow to Congress and to the American people that our president takes this issue not just seriously in Springfield and in the State of the Union speeches, but he's willing to take action on it and do it from the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, another step would be in following up on the executive order or doing it this at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And taking on the Federal Election Commission and having Congress follow through on some bipartisan legislation to reform the FEC and strengthen enforcement there. I think too often times, Juliet, you probably know this better than anybody, the FEC is currently comprised, is paralyzed, is deadlocked, and so oftentimes we find it is toothless and almost worthless in its ability to enforce the election laws of the land. Many members of Congress know this. They actually use the FEC in complaints going into elections, and they all recognize that it's broken. So putting forward bipartisan legislation to address the FEC would do a lot toward restoring trust from the American people in this. And I would say to your last question with respect to President Obama, what else he can do, he can continue to speak out about this, not just in the State of the Union and in Springfield, but we're seeing all kinds of states take this on. You know, they're tightening ethics and disclosure rules in Missouri and Montana. They're introducing a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United in New Hampshire. They're increasing transparency, as Governor Huntsman said, in Utah. They've heightened lobbying restrictions in New Mexico. They've passed a referendum with 63% of the vote for cleaner elections in the state of Maine. The American people get this. They are doing things across the country to clean up their own local and state politics, yet Washington is gridlocked and deadlocked and inactive on this. So I think the president's role is to get the ball moving by signing the executive order, to continue to speak out on this, to do it maybe and visit states where we're seeing this activity take place, like Missouri and Montana and New Mexico and Maine, and encourage this effort to move from the states to our federal government, including FEC reform.
Hi, this is Dan. May I comment quickly on this question?
Sure.
Okay. It's no small thing, this executive order, because these applies to federal contractors who spend billions and billions of dollars, whether it's defense or related national security or agriculture or technology or you name it, healthcare across the board. So I wouldn't minimize this because it's going to apply to an awful lot of people who have a huge amount of influence over what our federal government does on a day-to-day basis. So I do agree with you on enforcement. Back in my old congressional days, I saw how slow the FEC was in actually, this is years ago when it was actually better than it was today. The final thing the president could do, I think, is to encourage people in the private sector, businesses, Fortune 500 leaders, other role models in society to get on board on the issue of campaign finance and especially with the issues that we're talking about today. I think he could even be more aggressive there than he is now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
This is Richard Painter. I am very disappointed with the situation at the Federal Election Commission. A while back, we had a German pornographer who was dumping money into a Los Angeles County ballot measure It simply requires workers to wear protective gear when they are making X-rated movies. And he was getting foreign money into our system. The Federal Election Commission wouldn't do anything about it. Now, I know it's debatable whether those laws apply to ballot measures, but the I was very upset that the Republicans on the commission weren't willing to even proceed to the next step and let the court sort that out rather than the Federal Election Commission just standing down. We need to fix the FEC, but if the president's going to show leadership, he needs first to do what he can, which is to sign this executive order, and then take on the FEC and take on Congress. If Congress will not, if the Senate will not confirm new nominees for the Federal Election Commission, we need to fix this situation. We need to fix it now.
Great. Thanks.
And we can take our next question from Peter Overby with National Public Radio. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. There's a law on the books that says federal contractors can't make campaign contributions. Just to be clear, would you lay out the difference between that and what the executive order is about?
Peter, say again. You're breaking up a little
okay.
bit. Say
okay.
again your distinction is here.
There's a law on the books that says federal contractors cannot make campaign contributions. And obviously the executive order goes farther than that. So what all does the executive order cover that the outright ban does not cover?
So the executive order, and Gabriella can explain in more detail, the executive order is clear in terms of stating to anybody doing business with the federal government that they have to disclose all of their political giving. That's, you know, direct contributions, that's contributions to outside groups, and that's the dark money that was unleashed in the Citizens United decision. So this would say to anybody, as Dan Glickman just said, whether you're a defense contractor doing billions of dollars worth of business with the federal government, or whether you're a smaller agricultural company doing business with the Department of Agriculture, you know, this covers your giving not just to a federal candidate or a presidential candidate, but to dark money sources and outside sources. So I think this goes much farther than the law that is currently on the books. It would impact you know, most of the top Fortune 100 companies, and some of these Fortune 100 companies already voluntarily disclose all their giving, including potentially to outside groups, maybe even super PACs and other dark money and other sources, but many do not. So this would cover those seeking to do business with the federal government that currently don't voluntarily disclose all of their political giving.
Would it cover 501c4s, do you know?
Gabriella, do you know if it covers 501c4 giving?
That's right. So this would be to get to that dark money spending. And as Ambassador Roemer said, if you look at presidential politics in 2016, for months and months, you had Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side and Jeb Bush on the Republican side demurring whether or not they were going to officially throw their hats in the ring. And at the same time, groups that were supporting them and already doing a lot of work to help build up their credibility and standing to throw their hat in the ring were raising tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. So what we're looking at here is it's not just the official campaign, but it's these outside groups that have such a outsized influence in our elections that would be held accountable through this action.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Richard Painter. I mean, I'm looking at the Federal Election Commission webpage, and they list this prohibition right underneath foreign nationals. foreign nationals and federal government contractors cannot make contributions to the political campaigns for federal office. But those prohibitions are very easy to avoid, whether it's through setting up PACs through subsidiaries and getting employees or subcontractors to contribute, or whether it's through dark money. And we need to recognize that these prohibitions are they're written there in the law, but they are being evaded very easily, and at a minimum, we ought to have disclosure, both with respect to the federal government contractors and I have urged with respect to the foreign money.
Okay. You know, this is Dan again. Tim and I were both members of Congress and ran for office back in the days when the overwhelming amount of money, in fact, maybe almost all the money, came either directly through a direct contribution to your campaign account or from a party, a state or national party, all of which contributions into were disclosed. And so the world has just changed. We've had a revolution, a transformation about how money is given. And now a big chunk of the money that goes into American politics is not disclosed. And I think fundamentally we're trying to address at least part of that problem today.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Lydia Wheeler with The Hill. Your line is open.
Thanks so much for holding this call. I just wondered if Issue 1's Reformers Caucus has any preferences on who would like to see Obama nominate to fill Scalia's vacancy. Is there anyone kind of on the president's shortlist that you know of that supports campaign finance reform? And if so, can you tell us who that is?
So, Lydia, that's a fair question at this point, but let me answer it a slightly different way. Issue 1, with 120 reformer caucus members, Democrats and Republicans, we have outlined about five different key principles for cleaning up big money in our politics. First, transparency and disclosure. Second, enforcement of the FEC and enforcement in other federal agencies, such as the IRS, of tax laws and impact giving. Third, state and local reform efforts and referendums to clean up politics. Fourth, new jurisprudence, including overturning Buckley versus Valeo and Citizens United and the possibility of a constitutional amendment. And fifth, lobbying reform that would cleave lobbyists from directly giving contributions to legislators. Such has been done in the state of South Carolina, where the South Carolina Supreme Court has reaffirmed the legality of that decision. So within those principles, and including the executive order in that, we are going to presidential candidates. We are encouraging presidential candidates to talk about what they would support to reform the campaign laws to address big money in our elections and do what the American people want them to do and clean this up. So to your question specifically on the jurisprudence side, we are currently encouraging the presidential candidates to take out strong positions in overturning Buckley versus Vallejo and Citizens United, and that if they would become president, would they be in favor of overturning these two decisions? In addition, a question that you're seeing asked that we're encouraging the presidential candidates on both sides to answer, would they make this an issue in their first 100 days? Is this a high priority and urgent item to these presidential candidates? And so we're encouraging those steps as well as these other steps that I've outlined to you. So I think, you know, at this point, we are not endorsing a particular Supreme Court nominee as the answer to this. We are trying to get our political system to answer this by taking on the reforms at the congressional level, at the state and local level, at the presidential level, whether it's the president today signing the executive order or a president nominating a Supreme Court nominee who will overturn Citizens and Buckley. We see this as our key role. How do we tee up the reforms the American people want rather than nominate a specific individual to the court? It's not so much the name that's important to us. It is their activity on the court and specifically overturning those two decisions. That's at the highest priority, along with our other, you know, four principled reforms. And we hope the different presidential candidates, as well as President Obama, would nominate somebody that would take action in these respective areas.
Yeah, this is Richard Painter. I do, I'm really thrilled that issue one is a broad-based group with conservatives as well as liberals who are committed to reform. I will point out that some in the reform community are adamant that the only way to solve this problem is what I call in my book the POTUS plus SCOTUS plan, to elect a president who will be almost certain to nominate a justice who would overturn Citizens United, and of course elect a Senate that would confirm such a justice. And usually that plan is pushed most aggressively on the more liberal end of the political spectrum. The problem I point out for political conservatives is that if they deny there's a problem or don't come up with other solutions, I think they're going to get clobbered on this issue in the next election. There are other answers. There's plenty we can do within the confines of Citizens United, even though I personally don't agree with that decision, with respect to taxpayer-funded elections, with respect to disclosure, with respect to this executive order. And that action could be taken now by Congress. And if they want to take this highly politicized Supreme Court debate off the table, or at least take the campaign finance issue off the table and the debate over the Supreme Court, Congress needs to act now with respect to what they can do constitutionally within the confines of Citizens United. And as I say, I think otherwise those of us on the conservative end of the spectrum are going to be going into this election with an enormous handicap.
Thank you.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star, then one on your touch-tone phone. We can take our next question from Ken Doyle with Bloomberg BNA. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks a lot. You've put together a bipartisan group supporting this executive order and some other changes, but this is not at all a bipartisan issue among current officials. And I'm wondering why there's such a difference between former officials and the people that are currently in office who could actually affect this more easily. For example, on the executive order, I believe Republicans on the Hill have added provisions to a number of appropriations bills trying to block President Obama from issuing this executive order. And I'm wondering why this has become such a polarized issue among current lawmakers.
Again, great question, and this is Tim Romer again. Great question, and I think it goes to the heart of the issue here. This issue is simply not polarized at all outside of Washington, D.C. The moat that goes around Washington, D.C., where you have the gridlock and the paralyzed government and dysfunctional relationships between people, it reflects not only their inability to address big money in politics, but to address a number of other important issues for the American people. Outside of Washington, however, you have 80% of Democrats, 75% of Republicans, 77% of independents, all saying you have to clean up big money in politics. As I stated before, we have scores of states that are taking on lobbying reform, ethics reform, small donor contributions and matches, Maine taking on a statewide referendum to clean up their elections, and I think getting almost 65% of the people to vote for it. So everywhere in the country, this is not a red state or a blue state or a purple state issue. It's an American issue that the American people want to clean up. Only in Washington is it polarized. So one of the things we've tried to do about that is to form this group of former members of the Senate and the House that understand elections and the possibility of giving advantage to one side or the other when you pass campaign finance laws, who understand the importance of raising money in elections in order to get reelected, that we then have hopefully some standing with some of these people up on the Hill, and we can go up and meet with them and talk to them about why this is really in their interest to, you know, not to disarm to the point where, you know, you can't win election, but that we're not on a race of mutually assured destruction as we are right now in both parties, with the American people coming down on the side of not trusting anybody in politics anymore as a result of big money influencing too much. The American people believe that donors influence elections more than voters do. That is a travesty for our democratic system when that begins to seep into the minds and the hearts of our people. So back to the basic point of your question, how do we try to convince and encourage these people in Washington to take the action that the American people want and that the states are already doing? I think John Huntsman and Dan Glickman and Richard Painter have keyed on some of these things. Richard makes a very compelling argument that it's important for conservatives to know that the big money needs to be cleaned up because it leads to bigger government, bigger spending, and Richard makes the point better than I do, earmarks and other things in government that Republicans are generally opposed to. And we make the argument on the Reformers Caucus that enforcement, transparency and disclosure, you know, states' rights, the states' reforms, lobbying reform and new jurisprudence, including overturning Citizens United and Buckley versus Vallejo, are key in terms of giving the power back to the people and the voters. So your question is a very good one. It's one that we've really tried to get our heads around. How can we best use what we've done in the past as former elected officials to go up and have conversations with the American people and with legislators to, you know, persuade and convince them that this is in their interest to do it?
Hi, this is Dan Glickman. If I just may add this to what Tim has well said. You know, the preservation of political power is kind of an axiom in our system. Nobody wants to give it up. And so taking some political risks by changing the fundraising system, in some people's minds, attacks the status quo. Nobody wants to do it because they don't want a chance that they might lose out in a different kind of system. And so that's just kind of the natural order of things. And therefore, I don't think you find a lot of angels, frankly, on either side of the political aisle who are probably doing as much as they should be doing to get this done. That's why I think this executive order is so important, because what it is it adds additional disclosure and transparency, so the American public, the American people, will perhaps get agitated enough, have at town hall meetings or wherever it is, to try to influence the political system. Because I think this has to come from as much the grassroots as it comes from the grass tops. And even if you look at the Trump or the Sanders political phenomenon, and I don't support either one of them, but I think it does reflect the feeling from the grassroots that the political system in this country is not as resilient as it ought to be, and there need to be changes made. And perhaps that's the kind of signal that hopefully will be buttressed by greater transparency in our political contribution system. It will be helpful to get changes made.
As Richard Painter, I have to say that a lot of the money goes to incumbents, so it's quite obvious why incumbents are less willing to take action. And the perception out here in Minnesota, at least, of ordinary people is that both the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress are addicted to campaign money, and that's why there isn't action. The Republicans use their control of both houses to try to block reform. The Democrats will backdoor their objections to reform through the White House and elsewhere, and then blame it all on the Republicans. But both the Democrats and Republicans in Congress I think the people are well aware that they're not taking action when they need to.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star, then one on your touch-tone phone. We'll pause briefly for any additional questions to queue. Again, it's star, then one to ask a question.
This is Tim Romer. Again, to Ken's question, which is a thoughtful question, just one more comment on it. We've heard a number of the political candidates for president on both the Democratic and the Republican side talk about this economic anxiety in the country and the dislocation, the worry about jobs, the worry about people's and their kids' futures. There's also a political anger and rage, and many people feel that the political system is rigged or not reflective of their own desires and votes, but the donors are getting their influence reflected instead. And so Washington is captured by this money machine and the effort to raise money and raise money for re-elections and for committees and for the parties and so forth, and they are not hearing the message from the American people that there's anxiety on the economic side and rage on the political side, which is combining, I think, in powerful ways for Washington to – they better be paying attention to this. This is a very, very, I think, important movement out there.
I'd say, as Richard Painter again, this is a dangerous situation. If you look back at the last years of the Weimar Republic, you had part of the electorate was going toward socialism and communism, one extreme and the other, embracing authoritarian version of government and racism and various other extremes. We all know what happened. And we have a disenfranchised, angry electorate in difficult economic times. It is a volatile situation, and it's our responsibility as American citizens to fix this problem rather than have voters continue to feel angry and disenfranchised.
This is Gabriella. I just wanted to thank everyone for joining us on this call today. Remember that issue1.org, we will have a recording of this, and also issue1.org/reformers. There's an interactive map so you can find where reformers are in your hometown and putting the pressure on for reforms there. On the note, in terms of the angry electorate and what can be done about that, Issue One's executive director, Nick Penniman, has a book coming out on Super Tuesday, March 1st, along with best-selling author Wendell Potter. It is called Nation on the Take, How Big Money Corrupts Our Democracy and What We Can Do About It. It offers a lot of case studies that look at money and politics not on its own, but how it's connected to issues that affect Americans every day with solutions. So not just talking about the problem, but how, what we can do about that. And that's at nationonthetake.com. I don't believe we have any other questions, so I just wanted to thank all of our panelists and all the callers and all the great questions that were asked today. Please stay tuned. We'll have more calls like this in the future.